A very good evening. Thank you everyone for joining. Our topic tonight, Harchakas blended with Shalom Bayis. And I'm hoping that we will be able to uncover, if you will, a dimension in Shalom Bayis that's not usually addressed. We just experienced Tu B'Shvat, Rosh Hashanah La'ilanos. And the famous question about Tu B'Shvat is that you could New Year it all you want, but I don't see a single blossom. And what exactly are we celebrating? And the answer, of course, is potential. Everything's ready to go. Rashi's words, Rov Gishmei Shana, most of the rain has already come. The sap in the tree is active. The DNA is all worked out. It can produce apples, oranges, esrogim, whatever type of tree it is. It's ready to go. Whether it will or it won't is a whole different discussion. But it has the potential to do it. And I think marriages are like that. Everything's there. There's the husband, there's the wife, there's everything ready to happen. It's just a question of whether it does or it doesn't. We're davening that everything should develop properly. It's like that with everything. You could have a person who's very wealthy and they're still starving. Between stress and illness. The fridge is full, but they're not eating. And it's like that with Shalom Bayis. Everything's there, but it's just not happening. I don't mean Chas v'Shalom, it's not happening that they're screaming or throwing dishes at each other. It's not happening. It's not developing according to the standards that we would like it to develop. And I suspect that many people don't even know how good it can develop because we're totally unaware. In Sheva Brachas, there's one bracha of Mesameach Chasan Vikala, that the chasan and the kala should be joyous. But in that bracha, they're still separate. In the last bracha of the Sheva Brachas, it's Mesameach Chasan im hakala, that the chasan should rejoice with the kala. And Rashi says they're two different brachas. Sameach Chasan vikala, they could have good health, they could have wealth, they could have a beautiful home. But when he's in, she's out. When she's in, he's out. I remember a couple when I was growing up in Muncie. Beautiful home, beautiful kids, beautiful cars. Not in that order. But he was always on vacation. Or business. He was out. He was out. And when he came home, that was the only time she could leave, because now there was someone to cover the kids. So she left. That's Misameach Chasan Vikala, but it's not Misameach Chasan Im Hakala. The laws of Harchakos, the laws of Nida, are, I believe, designed to propel the relationship to a whole new level. And we know this, but I don't think we understand to the extent of how profound it is that we're trying to develop all dimensions of the relationship. We know, for example, it's a clear Gemara, that one of the reasons for Nida is Shalo Yakutzba, so that the husband should not become disgusted, whether that's an overstatement or intended literally, but we have the expression, familiarity breeds a lack of love. We're diplomatic tonight. It's not all it could be because it's too familiar. So there's a distance put. And now we treasure the relationship. That's certainly one level, but I'd like to try to build beyond that. Firstly, we do not find harchakos by other relationships, which is very odd. We're talking about a married man and a married woman, and they're handing something to each other, and there's no restriction. You don't have to put it down instead of handing it, even though they're very forbidden to each other. Why is that? But when it's husband and wife, oh no, harchakos, you're not allowed to hand to each other. You have to put it down in between. What do you mean? It's my spouse. What's the answer? With the spouse, there's chiba. There's endearment. It's almost like Chazal are saying, when you hand something to a spouse, you're expected to accidentally, on purpose, touch each other. And therefore, on the spouse, there's a restriction. On somebody else? Get out of here. I'm not worried. Just be careful. No problem. But on a spouse, we're being told that that's the dynamic of endearment, and therefore you have to be cautious. There's a second element, though, which I think is really the profound aspect of harchakos. And that is that to the extent that husband and wife are permitted to each other, when there's a conflict, you could circumvent the need for conflict resolution, as a Rebbe of mine in yeshiva used to say, by going the route of huggy-kissy. Instead of properly working through the disagreement, as Chazal would want us to, respectfully, with dignity, it could simply be solved by huggy-kissy. And that's not true development of a relationship. The real development is when we're big about it and it's hard to broach the subject and we tell each other we need to make time to work this out. And we make the time and we sit down. And the only thing we have in common with our spouse is the desire to work it through. There is nothing else at that moment that we have in common. I for sure don't want to do it your way, and you for sure do not want to do it my way. You should be zeicha now and then, right? I mean, I'm making it extreme, but let's say it's extreme. That's fine. But that's a massive development of the relationship when you sit down and you say, let's work it out. They say in the name of the Vilna Gaon that in the last bracha of Sheva Brachas, that long one that describes the joy between husband and wife, Gila, Rina, Ditza, Vechedva, some people think it's just an opportunity to have more girls' names. You have 10 different descriptions of joy between husband and wife. What do you need 10 different descriptions? They say in the name of the Vilna Gaon that some of those relationships are developed primarily when husband and wife are permitted to each other, and some of those relationships are developed primarily when they are on off time in the cycle. Because there's certain things that only develop at that time. The Gemara says that the reason we have 10 terms for joy in that bracha is because Hashem made 10 chuppos, 10 special canopies, a chuppah for Adam and Chava. And corresponding to the 10 that he made, that they were able to achieve 10 different dimensions in their marriage, so we develop 10 different dimensions in our marriages. But the Vilna Gaon is saying some of them are going to develop naturally during permitted time, and some of them are going to develop during forbidden time. There's a famous Gemara that if a marriage dissolves, so Mizbeach Boche, the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash cries. What's the Mizbeach crying for? So Rav Pam used to quip. He said, when a marriage dissolves, what about the children? He says, the children are the karbanos. They're the sacrifices. So the Mizbeach cries. You're supposed to sacrifice animals. You're not supposed to sacrifice your own children. But I think there's also a more joyous type of understanding why the Mizbeach is crying. What did they bring on the Mizbeach? Karbanos. What are karbanos? So the different varieties of karbanos. There's an ola that says, I want to come closer to Hashem, voluntary. There's a chatos, I did a sin, I'm trying to say I'm sorry. There's a shlamim and a toda, when a person's trying to say thank you. In marriage, a person is supposed to bring forth these types of emotions and these types of communications. And if they don't, and it deteriorates, then the Mizbeach is the one, so to speak, entity in the world that can truly identify with the tragedy. Because the things you were supposed to do, you didn't do. And I can identify, exactly. You didn't bring the ola, you didn't bring the chatas, you didn't say I'm sorry, you didn't say thank you, you didn't show appreciation, you didn't do what you were supposed to do. And one of the underdeveloped dimensions, I believe, publicly in our generation, is the proper communication and development of the off time during the relationship. I'd like to describe it a little bit like people's attitude to Yom Kippur. Some people use Yom Kippur, they use it, they squeeze it for all it's worth. From the start of Yom Kippur to the end of Yom Kippur, right? That's the way we do it in White Oak. You try to get the most out of it. And there are people in marriages that are like that too. And the time of Nida, the time of off time, you want to get the most out of it. But there are other people that approach Yom Kippur and approach the time of Nida the same way, very different way. I just got to get through it. I got to get through it. I'm going to go to sleep. Wake me up when it's over. And that's a terribly lost opportunity. Because there's an entire relationship here that's supposed to happen. Yom Kippur is not just about fasting. It's while you're fasting, what can you do with it to be elevated? And the same is true with the laws of Nida. It's an opportunity, number one, to appreciate what's supposed to be in Chiba. That when you hand something to a spouse, it's not just business as usual. Okay, I had to get this from here to here, and you're a good conduit. Here, take it. There's a relationship here. But perhaps even greater, like we're describing, there's a dimension of respect and communication that develops specifically when you can't just make it all good by physical contact. And as a result, an entire soul dimension, emotional dimension, personality dimension becomes activated with the couple. So I'd like to do a quick review of the basics of harchakos. What kind of limitations do we have in physical contact? And as we understand, the entire siman in Shulchan Aruch is not just physical contact, that husband-wife don't hold hands during the nida period, but that there are specific limitations about activities that would bring to the dimension of chiba that we're not looking for right now. And there's a different type of reyus or chiba, whatever correct word is appropriate, that we're looking to develop. I titled the first section, Levity versus Friendship. And I put the word love in parentheses because that's where it belongs. There's a big discussion among contemporary educators whether the word love is appropriate during the Nida period or not. And it makes no difference to me which side of the fence a particular couple falls, as long as we're aware that there's such a discussion. The word love can be taken in two very different ways. If it's used the correct way, we're good. If it's used improperly, it's steering us in a direction that's very uncomfortable and we don't want to be there during this time period. I like to call this period the time of best friends. Obviously, you're still married, please, husband and wife. But you're developing a dimension of best friends. Reyim Ahuvim, in the words of the Chasna. I remember in yeshiva, we were once pairing people up to learn Shmiras HaLashon, Sefer Chafetz Chaim. And we went over to one of the kolol gentlemen, and he says to us, "Oh, I learn Sefer Chafetz Chaim. I learn it with my best friend." And we were not married, and we looked at him really queer. We didn't know what he was talking about, but he was basically trying to tell us that he did it with his wife. Okay, you want to talk in riddles, but there's a dimension there that's true. To be aware. This carries over to a whole different area of Shalom Bayis, obviously, that sometimes at a family table or something, there could be a joke that's made at the expense of a spouse. And some people aren't sure what the relationship husband and wife is. I mean, I know it means joint bank account, and I know it means, you know, we share a home together. But husband-wife also means that you're best friends. And best friends don't leave the spouse vulnerable. And that's a dimension that we're developing. We stick up for each other. We develop that closeness very consciously during this time period. But we're cautious and avoid levity. So let's read the words of the Shulchan Aruch. Chayav adam lifrosh me ishta b'mei tamasa. A man has to separate from his wife during the time of Nida, until she counts the 7 clean days and goes to mikvah. Even if she takes a very long time for whatever reason, they don't have a mikvah available, whatever, if she didn't go to mikvah, no status changed. Not allowed to joke laughingly, lightheadedly with her, even verbally, Shema Yargil La Avera, lest it come to improper behavior. So there's a very delicate balance over here that's necessary to keep. you still want the home, both from husband and wife perspective, you want it to be friendly, you want it to be joyous. We still have a mikdash ma'at together. It's a holy place, it's a great place. But there's a degree of lightheadedness that's improper. My Rebbe in Yeshiva gave me a cute example. We'll see later in the sections that a man is not allowed to eat his wife's leftover food, but if he doesn't know that it's her leftovers, he's allowed to eat it. He doesn't know. She took a few bites. She's done. She leaves it there. Egg salad. I don't know. Something that he doesn't realize that she ate from it. So if he knows it's an act of endearment for him to take her leftovers and you're not allowed to do that. But if he doesn't know, so he's allowed. And she is not obligated to tell him that it's her leftovers. So we had a case where the man asked his wife, "Did you eat from this?" And she answered, "I'm not telling." Now, that's cute. That's creative. That may or may not allow him to eat the leftovers, but that's prohibited on Lo Yakel Rosh. You're not allowed to be lightheaded like that. There's laughter, there's joking, but that crossed the line. It's an example of how delicate it is. The Shevet HaLevi Rav Vosner writes, for example, that in a conversation with one's spouse, you're not allowed to have romantic closeness. He describes it where you hear the other person's breathing very distinctly. It doesn't matter if you hear their breathing or not. I mean, thank God we should all be breathing 120, you know. But that romantic closeness, you're not allowed to lean over and you can't do that during this time. Gifts are permitted, but not a gift of mikveh night. It's a different type of gift. Whether it's earrings for the woman on the night of mikveh before she goes, or whatever the reciprocal is to give the man, you can't do that. One could say, we have a date, we're blocking out time, we're being conscious. Unfortunately, in our time, I've encountered people aren't even aware, it's not on their calendar. And Chazal wanted it to be like an anniversary. They wanted it to be like a wedding night. But to do beyond that, you can't do. But to make it that it's special and make it very clear that it's special, that is definitely true. That's correct. Section 2, passing and touching, is the most famous of the laws. Lo yiga bo afilu be'etzpe ketana. Not allowed to make contact even in a little finger, even the most minute of touching. And one of the lessons here, of course, is that even the most minute touch between husband and wife is significant. You touch someone of the same gender, and some people don't even realize that they're touching. You have it in the classroom, right? You could reach out and a teacher can adjust the way a child is holding the pen or pencil, and no one even thinks of it. It's not even thought of as human contact. You don't think about it. What Chazal are telling us is that touching between spouses, even the most minute, yeah, it's supposed to be electric. It's supposed to be special. Lo yoshit miyado liyado shum davar. You're not allowed to pass anything one to the other. V'lo yikablenu miyado. This is a harchaka that goes both for man and for woman, although not all harchakas are reciprocal. Shema yiga bevsara, lest he touch and make contact. V'chein ayide zrika miyado liyado lehefechaser. And the same thing is through throwing is also forbidden. So even to toss something purposely, directly to the spouse, you can't do. Certainly handing something, even if it's a long thing, that's the way the Shulchan Aruch codifies it, you're not allowed to do that. Now, a lot of questions come up. One question is, you're holding a baby, a child. You're allowed to pass the child, one spouse to the other. And likewise, if you're not in the spouse nida issue, but should you purposely make yourself available and take the child because you know that they're not going to be able to pass the child, what is the level of permissibility on that? So the rule basically is that if the child is going themselves, it's fine. But if the child is so young that they can't show initiative and lean over, or if the child is tantruming and doesn't want to go from one to the other, then you're not going to be able to hand one to the other. Obviously, it's an emergency, you're going to figure out. We'll discuss medical need is a whole different discussion, but you're going to have to put the child down rather than hand the child one to the other. If the child goes on their own, then it's fine. Child walking, holding hands with both parents. Who wants to pass in the shaila? No problem. Because you're holding here, it's a real live child in between. I'm not passing the child. Child's walking on their own. Everything's fine. Unless you start playing, one, two, three, lift. And then that's a whole different game. So it simply means that we start paying attention. Does it fit any of the technical categories, number one? And secondly, does it enter into levity? Does it enter into a level of joking, of kibitzing, that's crossing a line? If needed, if you're dealing with a large and heavy object and there is no alternative, there are many poskim, and that's the way we paskin, who allow husband and wife to lift it together. The case typically is a carriage getting onto a bus. So nowadays, everyone has downsized carriages. I don't even know if it's so applicable. But the old carriages, you got to get it onto the bus, and you need a helper. And the poskim said that even though there's some dissent and whatever, but bottom line is, in a case of need, we're matter that. You're not allowed to transfer fire one to the other. So like for one person to light the match and the other spouse to be holding out the Havdalah candle, you can't transfer the case, forgive me, in original literature was she lights a match and lights the cigarette that's in his mouth. Now, I don't know who still owns cigarettes. But that was the original case, and the Havdalah candle is a similar, you're transferring, you're coming in contact by transferring fire. A similar case that should be avoided is she holds the besamim or he holds the besamim by Havdalah for the other one to take smell. So that's it's like a connection. Put it down, let the other person do what they have to do, and we're good. One other case I gave you the source if you want to get involved. Rabbi Eider, page 148, writes that you're allowed to drop something into the bag that someone else is holding. So if the woman has a pocketbook open, you want to drop in a key, a cell phone, or something. So that's not considered handing. Section 3, eating. Lo yochal ima al hashulchan, not allowed to eat together at the table. Ela imken yeshum shinui. There has to be something unusual, a davar mafsik, something in between ka'ara shaloh leka'ara shaloh, between his plate and her plate. And the Mechaber Shulchan Aruch gives an example, lechem o kankan, a loaf of bread or a bottle that's not being used for this meal. So there are two significant leniencies that the Shevet HaLevi describes here, that even though the Mechaber worded it in the way he did, it doesn't, based on the background literature, it doesn't have to be exactly that. It doesn't have to be as big as a loaf of bread or a bottle. Rav Ozner allows to put down even a pen or a ring. But something has to be on the table of significance. It can't just be a piece of paper. It has to have some height. It has to have some presence. And it has to separate between. And the second leniency that he allows is it doesn't have to be right in between like a mechitza. It could be a little off to the side, it's fine. As long as it's distinctly on the table in a way that you see it. The only exception is when someone is actually eating with them at the table, preferably sitting in, whatever, doesn't matter. Rabbi Frost discusses it. This is a little bit of a discussion, but the practical is if someone else is eating with them at the table, that would cause them to restrain themselves from acts of endearment, then it would be okay without the hefsek. So that, let's say at a Shabbos table, they're sitting down, they don't have to put something down in between them while they're guests at someone else's house, or even in their own house if they have guests. That's not necessary because people are eating with them. It also goes back to the theme that we've mentioned, that Chazal are basically telling you that when you eat together, it should be prone to paying attention to each other and acts of endearment, right? The throwback of a generation, which still exists, of one spouse or the other reading the newspaper during supper is not healthy. We may have outgrown the newspaper, but now we do it on the cell phone. And Chazal are telling us what a supper table is supposed to look like. It's supposed to look like both spouses paying attention to each other, to the point that if not for something demarcating a separation, they would be prone to leaning over and touching. As I mentioned, Aser lo lechol mishirei ma'achol shalo, he's not allowed to eat her leftovers, but I underlined it specifically, it's forbidden for him. She is allowed to eat his leftovers. And that's not considered an act of endearment for whatever reason, the difference, but that's not a problem. Page 2. Drinking. Lo yishte mishiyure kosha shasasahi. He's not allowed to drink from what she drank, and that's true even if you added drink to the cup. It's still her drink. The only way to get around it, if you wanted to have him drink her leftover, is to actually transfer it from that cup to a different cup, and then it gets a new status, and he would be allowed to drink. Sometimes there's leftover. I wrote down in my notes the example of Kiddush wine, which is something we got to try to work out. But before we get to Kiddush wine, just general wine. Sometimes someone will pour wine for one of them, and it's more than they want. They take a sip. It's too strong for me, too sweet for me. Would you like it? So to a spouse, we do these things. You know, okay, I'll drink it. If you're not having the wine, I'll have it. But he can't drink from that cup that she sipped from. They would have to transfer the wine to a different cup if they wanted to do something like that. Now, in terms of Kiddush, it sounds like a big problem. It's not a big problem. Assuming that the man is making Kiddush, so if she normally drinks from the same cup, which some couples like to do, so he would drink whatever he's drinking, he puts it down, and she's allowed to take it and drink, because she's not restricted in drinking his leftovers, no such restriction, and he's not sending it to her, which is a different restriction. Now let us send her a cup of wine. That's an act of endearment. He doesn't send it. He puts it down. Another possibility, if she doesn't drink directly from the cup, he's allowed to pour off into a glass whatever he's not going to drink. He drinks from the cup, and she purposely takes from the glass that he half-filled, or whatever he did, and pours that into her drinking glass. So you just have to introduce one extra glass to the table so that he can pour his leftovers into his cup, into whatever. But he should not be pouring into her glass, because that's the equivalent of sending her a cup of wine. The other possibility is if there are lots of people at the table, you simply fill up a lot of glasses, and she takes whichever one she wants, and he doesn't calculate which one is going to her. He just keeps filling, and she purposely takes the second one this week, the first one next week, the third one the next week, and he's not sending her anything. He's just putting her in charge of distributing the wine as she sees fit. So a bunch of solutions in terms of that. The halacha is that if she walks out, he's allowed to eat her leftovers. If she leaves. It seems that it's only like the act of endearment is for him to start, in her presence, to start eating from that egg salad. Yummy. What happens if she comes back into the room? Nothing changes. Once he's allowed to start, he's allowed to continue. And like we mentioned, she doesn't have to inform him if he's unaware. It's only if he's aware that it's considered an act of endearment. Section 5 is what I mentioned. Kishem sha'asura limzog lo kahu asur limzog la. Both he and her are restricted in pouring for the other one drinks. The notable exception is water. That's not considered a significant drink. In classic literature, it was wine that we were talking about. But in practical, we are careful about any drink, including juice or soda. And either pour water or let the other one pour for themselves. The rule on mixing drinks is only befanov, in front of the spouse. So that if you wanted to make the other one a cocoa, just the right way. As long as it's not befanov, in front of the spouse, you'd be allowed to do that. So if the kitchen is not visible to the dining area, you could do it. If it is visible, so then the solution basically is to set up the drink except for one ingredient. Like if the person likes to add their milk, even though the spouse knows just how to put in the right amount of milk, but leave that item out. One item. And like this, you put in your own milk. And like this, you're not being mosaic, creating the drink in its full status. Again, you take a step back from this. We're learning it for the harchakos. But apparently, mixing someone else's drink is an act of chibah. It's an act of endearment. I know how you like your drink. And certainly, when it's permitted to do so, it's a shalom bayis enhancer. Section 6. Beds. So we have a number of different angles regarding beds. Number 1, lo yoshe b'mita miyuchedes la. He is not allowed to sit on the bed that's designated for her, afilu shelo b'faneha, even not in front of her. Now this, the Mefarshim say, is worded very carefully because it's not reciprocal. She is allowed to sit on the bed that's designated for him, the way we paskin, even in front of him. So that if for some reason she needs to sit down in that part of the room, she's allowed to. But he is not allowed to sit on her bed. Both of them would be restricted from laying in the other one's bed. Unless someone's out of town, which could start changing the halachas a little bit, but as long as they're around, you're not allowed to lay in the other one's bed either way. Secondly, afilu im shochvim b'shtei mitos, v'amitos nogos zu b'zu osur. Even if they're in two beds, but the beds are touching, it's going to be forbidden. This is not typically a problem at home, because by definition, an observant couple bought two different beds and they put something in between, like a night table. But when we're traveling, it can become challenging. Some guest rooms don't have a lot of room between the beds. And we need a certain amount of separation between the beds. There's a discussion how much. Certainly, it has to be enough that you couldn't roll from one to the other, because that's like the equivalent of one bed, even though it's two different mattresses. But if they're like almost adjoining, and a person could roll back and forth, that's not enough separation. Preferably, there should be enough separation that the bedding should not be touching one to the other, or even better would be that a simple rolling over in bed or something wouldn't risk touching each other's hands. But it depends how big the guest room is, and that you'll figure out. But there should be at least the minimal separation, that it's not considered the equivalent of one bed, even though agreed it's two different mattresses, but if they're so close, that's not sufficient. Also, there's a fascinating distinction made between acts of endearment and labor. When making a bed, there are different parts to the behavior. So, asura la'atzia mitaso b'fanav, she's forbidden from making his bed, and she is forbidden, and he's... This is a reciprocal one. Both of them are forbidden from making the other one's bed. However, dafka prises sadinim, only the sheets, the blanket, the things that are derechiba, particularly you fold over the flap in some cultures, is like an invitation to get into bed. That's an act of endearment. That's like a real special way of making it. You're not allowed to do that bifanov, in front of the spouse. Shalo bifanov is fine. If the spouse is not in the room, you can do it even if they know you did it. But in their presence, you're not allowed to do that making the bed. Avalatzos hakorim v'akistos, but arranging the cushions, the equivalent of our mattresses, which is toreach, a bother, a labor. It's a schlep. Ein derechiba. That's not endearment. And that's permitted even in front of the other. So if the spouse is in the room and you're arranging the mattress, you're flipping it up over like some people do every 6 months or whatever the rules are, that's fine. Even doing the bedspread, putting the blanket into the quilt, is permitted in front of the spouse, because that's not an act of endearment. That's an act of labor. We do it periodically. We kvetch about doing it a little bit. And it's something that just needs to be done. But then to go take it and arrange it on the bed, that would be called making the bed. And that's what's restricted in front of the spouse. Let's move on to page 3, the last page. So sitting on the same bench, particularly if it's wobbly, becomes a concern. And we have to know exactly what the details of how to paskin are, but it should be avoided. If it's a wobbly bench, if it's something that you can feel each other's movements, the solution is you could possibly put something in between. If you're walking in a park and you have a knapsack, you could flip a knapsack in between as a separation, which is like a demarcation. It separates a little bit. But generally, if it's a wobbly bench in particular, that's something that we're concerned about. And likewise, outings that are derech tiyul, things, trips that are not business destination or going to a simcha or just an outing in the park, but things that are really like a romantic getaway. So that's restricted during harchaka time. And sometimes a person needs to think it through or ask a shayla how exactly to navigate certain vacation time that we're entitled to. What type of outing should it be made into, and what should be avoided? The second part of section 7, lo yistakel afilu ba'akeva, a man is restricted from looking at any part of his wife's body that's normally covered. It's an act of sensitivity between them. That doesn't mean she has to hide. It could mean that he just has to turn away. But they have to be sensitive to each other and just communicate. It also opens up the other discussion, which is that she's not going to dress with the expression of dress to kill. Just like really gorgeous in an inappropriate way. On the other hand, she's totally encouraged to be attractive and respectable, and she's allowed to wear jewelry and whatever she's going to do, put on makeup, but not in an excessive way that would cross the line to be inappropriate, even for her husband. There should be a sensitivity. The third paragraph is about serving. When a woman serves her husband, there has to be some sort of shinui, some sort of uniqueness in the way she presents the food. Either she's putting it down a little bit away from him, or she's giving it with her opposite hand. Some sort of shinui, some sort of unusual presentation. And the last of that section is asura litzok lo mayim lirchotz panav yada varaglov. An act of endearment that used to exist is that she would put out water for him to wash, to bathe. Today, there might be some examples, a foot bath. I mean, there might be some examples, but for the most part, it's not a common case. It prompts a shaila, though. Is she allowed to set the water up for mayim achronim or for washing to eat bread? And the answer is that all of that is permitted if it's for a mitzvah and it's not particularly chiba. It's something you would do to the next person online either way. So that's all permitted. Finally, the last section is the permitted aspects, the leniencies, in times of need, when there's a medical need. The way we paskin is that that kind of contact is not considered chiba, it's considered medical need, so that if there's no one else to take the pulse, for example, if there's no one else to give an inoculation, if there's no one else to do even other things, then a husband and wife are allowed to do for each other. We make a very strong recommendation that there should be a garment separating. If a garment is not doable, then we allow gloves. But, for example, a woman is in labor and she really wants somebody to rub her back or something like that. So if it's done with a towel separating, and husband can give a massage doing that without making physical skin-to-skin contact, then that would be acceptable under those circumstances. And likewise, if there are other types of things that have to be done, even though he, she would normally not put on gloves to deal with their spouse, but in this case, it would be recommended. It's a way to avoid skin to skin, at the very least, that level of protection is recommended. I'd like to conclude with two thoughts. One from Rabbi Yosef Cairo and one from the Rambam. Rabbi Yosef Cairo has a sefer called Magid Meisharim, in which an angelic spirit, individual, angel, whatever he might be called, used to visit him and convey certain messages, which Rabbi Yosef Cairo recorded in this sefer called Magid Meisharim. In Parshas Va'era, just a few short weeks ago, the Magid began the audience by telling him, "Halo odatich raza dinesheich. I really need to tell you the secret about your wife's soul. For Raza Dahai Itza Kesharta de Islach, I need to tell you what a special woman you have. Vesishte Moda Kama Yokar Islach Le'an Hagaba. And as a result, how much honor you should be showing her." Now, we all know the famous Gemara in Ksubis that if you want to endear a woman to her husband, you say, Kala noe vachasuda. The kala, she's a pretty one. She's a wonderful one. She's a good one. There's another dimension, though. The spouse has a neshama. The spouse is someone special. And that's the dimension that we're focusing on over here in Shalom Bayis. There is a dimension of shalom bayis that the other person is attractive. I like their personality. There's another dimension of friendship, of trying to bring out the best in the other person, being aware of their strengths and shortcomings, and trying together to do the most with life the way we're supposed to. As the Rambam writes, reciprocal, Mechabedes ishto yosa migufo, a man should honor his wife greater than himself, and she should be mechabedes es baila biyoser midai. She should honor her husband more than enough. I don't know exactly at what point more than enough is satisfied, but it's certainly a profound way to express it. Derech benos Yisrael v'nei Yisrael ha-kedoshim, the words of the Rambam, the way of the men and women of the Jewish people, Yeshuvan no'e u'meshubach, their dwelling is pleasant and praised. Yashar koach, I thank you for joining, and I